hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm here with one of my clients, the gorgeous Erica Macias. She is owner of High Tech Lending Mortgage Bank, located here in California, in Irvine. And Erica is a boss girl, a business boss girl. Erica, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dr. K. Thank you for having me. It's such an honor to be here with you.
Of course. And Erica and I were chatting. You know, I'm very chatty when I do injectables. And she was talking about finance women and how women don't take care of themselves enough. And I thought, what a great opportunity to talk to my listeners about how to fix their finances as a form of self-care. Because
absolutely.
What do you think of that?
I think you are spot on. I think your savings account should be part of your self-care.
It really should. I think as women, we're brought up to let men lead, whether it's your dad providing for you, your boyfriend, your husband, spouse, or whoever. And not enough of us, including myself, are in charge of our finances. Like, there's a division of labor in families where women get the children, the household, the, you know, keeping things beautiful, and then the men do the finances, the taxes, the credit cards, speaking in stereotypical terms, but don't you find that to be true?
Absolutely. I find that to be true. I actually wanted to break that mold when I was younger. I thought, no, I will always handle my own finances. And fortunately, I'm married to my husband, who's okay with me handling my part of the finances. And, you know, we can handle everything else together. But I firmly believe that as a woman, you need to have your feet well planted on the floor and make sure you know where your future, whether it be with your family, God forbid something happened, that you can maintain your family, you know, on your own as well.
That's so true. And too often, I think that we don't plan ahead for the future. And in our 20s and 30s, I see lots of clients who are gorgeous millennials, mm-hmm. but they're living in the moment. And they're also partially financed by their parents. And they're using their spending money for their jobs and not saving it. They're just spending it, splurging on indulgences. But what's a good strategy to advise our patients and friends from their 20s to 30s? How should they start their little nest egg and financial?
That's a great question. And I think we're all guilty of that in our 20s, right? We all just want to rush out and start buying everything our eyes see. But, you know, for me, the most important thing is, even if you find a dime on the floor, you've got to save a part of that money, right? Because you're only going to be able to live off of anybody helping you for so long. So as an independent person, whether you be a woman or a strong man or you know, whatever, it's always important that you create yourself, your net worth with your own goals. What are you looking to do? I want to go travel the world. You know, maybe right now during COVID, that's not the case. We're all itching to get out there as soon as we do. So save your money. Make a savings account that's realistic for you, not just a savings account that you dip into when you find a new pair of shoes or some new electronic that you want to purchase.
So people say save a third or a quarter of your paycheck. Is that a good balance?
It is a good balance. It has to be realistic to you. If you, after taxes, can't save that much, it's something is better than nothing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, everybody's situation is different, but starting $20, $40, $50 a month, it starts to add up. And when you start to see it grow, I guarantee you're going to be putting more and more money, because it's always nice when your bank account is growing.
The power of the compounding is just crazy. And I think every 20-year-old should probably open a Roth IRA account at this age. Absolutely. If you do, you'll be totally a millionaire by the time you're ready to retire.
Absolutely. And I don't think there's enough people out there speaking to the youth, whether you're millennial or the generations that come after. I don't hear a lot of people pushing them to go open up the IRAs that you're talking about, the Roth IRAs, savings accounts, you know, put your money maybe even in bonds, something that you can't touch. So you're not tempted.
It's not such a sexy topic, but if Kim Kardashian was right? telling all of our 20-year-old, 30-year-old followers to go start a Roth IRA, that's what I'm doing, I'm sure she has advisors telling her exactly where to put her money.
Absolutely. She didn't keep her money by not investing it wisely.
Yeah. So one of your good tips was, where should you start your savings account?
Well, you should always start your savings account. You know, obviously most people open up a checking account and they open up a savings together. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend that you open up a savings account in a completely separate bank. That way you don't touch that money when you're balancing your checkbook and thinking, well, if I just transfer this over from this checking or this savings account, I can buy those shoes next week. Mm-hmm. Well, no, you should really have one that you don't touch. Mm-hmm. It should be an out of sight, out of mind. And that is solely for your future purposes. That's a true savings account. Mm-hmm. And I am all about being realistic, right? Balance your bank account. Keep your money in your own pocket. Don't give it away to others, because you're not watching what you're spending. And that's why it's important that you have one that's at a different bank that you're not likely to tap into as soon as you want something or if you need some urgent situation.
That's true. It's a pain in the butt. So you're going to be, it's one more hurdle. Right, it's right. Like if you put the cookies way up high on top of the fridge, you're not going to eat them that often.
Exactly. Or if you don't buy them.
Yeah, true. So that's a great tip. Put your savings account somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Put aside a quarter of your paycheck if you can or something. Right. Start a Roth IRA.
Or join your company's 401k.
Do that for sure. But if you can't, then and how much money every year can you put into a Roth IRA?
Well, you know, I think it depends. I'm not a financial, you know, advisor. So I think you should probably, when you open up your Roth IRA, ask them, you know, because it changes every year. You can have different amounts. Same thing with the 401ks, the amounts change every year. So, you know, whatever's attainable for you is better than nothing. And it's always better to start it so that definitely you can't touch that right away. Yeah. If you're a little apprehensive and you think, well, I can't do that because if I need to save for a rainy day or something happens, I need to access it. That's understandable. So start with at least a regular savings account and then grow to a Roth IRA when it hits a certain amount that you're looking to have secure for the future that you know you won't touch.
Yeah, true. My parents always told me put $2,000 a year in your Roth IRA. And if you have that disposable income, you should. And it's going to sit there tax-free. And then when it matures, you're going to get that money tax-free. So that's a really great opportunity to invest that, I think.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And it is. And I think what we also need to kind of go back a little bit to is the old school way. Our parents always told us, save your money, save your pennies. Yeah. I just don't hear it. And you know, obviously, I'm not in everybody's household. And maybe a lot of kids, you know, millennials and below do hear it, but I don't see it pushed as much as I see all the retail pushed, right? Yeah. And, you know, it's great, you know, that they come here to you. Fantastic. I mean, you should take care of yourself. You should self-care, but you shouldn't neglect the future you self-care either.
Exactly. Yeah, people should plan for that because it surprised me a little bit to see so many people coming in during the pandemic with unemployment and scary foreseeable future, but still wanting to take care of themselves. So I thought that was terrific because, like you said, self-care, self-esteem, you got to pick yourself out of bed every day and feel good about yourself, good enough to go out into the world. So I think taking care of your face is great, but also sometimes I wonder, like, okay, should you be using that towards your college tuition right. or your books?
Exactly.
You know, like exactly. Splurge, but within reason.
Well, that's where you have to be realistic. I think it's important to set a budget every month for yourself. And I used to call it my entertainment budget. Yeah. It's like, okay, this is my going out money. This is will be my, you know, going to Dr. K money. But here's my savings account money as well. So you just have to be realistic. I'm definitely not for, you know, depriving yourself of everything because you think you can't. I think if you balance your bank account, you can absolutely start to afford all the luxuries in life. But you have to be realistic, right? I'm not going to go out and buy a Ferrari if I don't make Ferrari kind of money, right? Yeah. I'd be spending all my money toward that payment and then I would have nowhere to sleep. So that's not realistic. And your daily life should be realistic to what you can actually attain and still come to Dr. K.
And then in your 30s to 50s, priorities sort of change. So I think as you start to see all your friends getting married and settling down, having kids, and you invest in bigger purchases like owning your own car, getting a condo or a home. What's kind of a good financial thinking process for those?
Well, absolutely. That's when you really want to start really putting more effort into your savings account so that you can grow that deposit for your first home. And there's a lot of programs out there that can help you with little down payment. I know it gets a little harder here in Southern California because homes are a little more expensive than other areas, but it's always worth, even if you're buying a small condo, it's real estate and you can never go wrong with real estate.
Mm-hmm. So you're in mortgage banking. How did you get into that?
Wow, well, that is it's a funny little story, actually. My parents were both real estate agents. And one day I was not in school when I was supposed to have been in school.
Bad girl.
Yeah. Bad for me. I was in high school. And my father, lo and behold, happens to be showing a house right across the street from where I was hanging out and not in school. When I got home, he decided that the rest of my school year would basically belong to him. Mm. So I would go help him at his office and, you know, do all his calls, return calls, make calls, whatever he needed me to do. I was going to do it for sure. And after that, I just kind of got pulled in and I never left.
Wow. Well, that was a good fortuitous thing.
Right. So I laugh about it now with him, but wasn't so much funny for him when he saw me across the street when I wasn't supposed to be there.
Like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And mortgage banking right now has, I've heard that real estate is off the charts it's during COVID.
It absolutely is on fire. For us, the year started off, you know, obviously like any other year until about February, March. And then it got real scary really fast, right? With COVID, having to have everybody go remote. And then, you know, the pandemic started really hitting and people started, the unemployment started really rising. But shortly after, you know, the government kind of stepped in and rates now are lower than they've ever been, you know, ever. They're in the twos. That's absolutely unheard of. Mm-hmm. And so I would absolutely tell anybody now, buy that house now. Now is the time. Even if the sales price is higher, the rates are so much lower, it might balance out. So reach out to your local agent and see about, you know, purchasing a home right about now or refinancing your current one.
How do you feel about renting or owning?
Well, you know, I've done both in my life, obviously. So renting, it depends on the space you're in. I don't knock renting because sometimes it makes more financial sense for someone if they're not planning to live in the area long term or they have a certain job that might take them different places. So I always say it depends on where you are at in your life. But absolutely, one of the smartest things you can do is buy real estate.
Yeah, I mean, I've worried about that in my own practice, just as paying rent every month. You think like, okay, there goes $10,000, $15,000 of rent money every month. I should be putting that into a mortgage for an office building that I own, which will turn into a retirement package. But Absolutely. It's not always that easy.
It's not. No, you're absolutely right. It's not always that easy. I was fortunate enough to have bought my home when I was a lot younger, and now it's turned into a rental. I've since gotten married, and I live with my husband in another home, but, you know, it is definitely going to be a retirement for me, you know, retirement income. And it's very important that even if it's a small condo and you have your eye on it and it's in a prime little location, you know, it's the cliche location, location, location. You know, what you might think is it's okay now, but in the future, if there's build out around there, if there's going to be malls or, you know, any kind of plazas, that's always more attractive for people to go rent because it's easy near a freeway. So absolutely, even if it's a small condo, I recommend doing it. You can live in it first. And then, you know, when you outgrow it, then you can rent it out.
Mm-hmm. I think real estate is such a great investment, but it does take a bit of a learning curve. In the beginning, mortgages are so overwhelming, like this, the whole concept of having a mortgage and the 50 pages that you have to sign your life away to.
believe me, I know. I mean, I've purchased my home and I'm in the business. And yes, absolutely. With new regulations, absolutely. It gets very overwhelming. So I always try to talk people into don't stress so much about the paperwork. It can be explained. You just have to know what a mortgage really means for you, right? You're going to be locked into a certain payment for 30 years or however many year terms that you want to do it. You're going to be making a payment either way, whether you're renting or owning. And at that point, it's up to you. What can you realistically afford?
Is it good to pay off your mortgage early?
Most people would say absolutely yes, because it sounds very attractive that you don't have a mortgage payment. But sometimes it doesn't have to be. Because it can also be a write-off for you, right? I'm not a CPA, can't kind of tell you exactly, give you that kind of financial advice, but absolutely, it's a write-off for you. So most of the time, you don't want to fully pay it off when you're younger, right? Once you start getting to like your 30s, 40s, yeah, it becomes more attractive. In your 50s, absolutely, then you really want it to have it paid off. If you're fortunate enough to do it, sure, do it. I wouldn't spend all my money, cash savings into paying it off, no. It, especially if it could be turned into a rental, then I really wouldn't want to do it. I would much rather have the rental income pay it down versus my own personal savings pay it down.
And what's a good strategy in terms of investments? So in your 30s to 40s, you're settling down when you finally get a house going, and then you have some money on the side, you want to start investing in stocks, bonds. Absolutely. What do you think is best to start dabbling in for a younger, you know, independent person just starting out?
Well, first and foremost, like you mentioned, the Roth IRAs. You definitely want to start doing that or plump up your 401k. But yeah, absolutely. After that, I would say the stocks and the bonds. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe start off with low risk and then kind of turn the gauge from there. You know, find a good financial advisor. That's always going to be key. Somebody that's got your best interest that you vibe with, that truly has your best interest
at
heart.
So you won an award this year. Did you get nominated to speak at a really wonderful conference. Tell me a little bit about that.
I did. Yes, I was fortunate enough to speak at Next Mortgage Events. They're a group of top EO women from different mortgage companies, and the talent was amazing. I was very honored to be part of that circle. And it just was, it was so welcoming by all of these women that they were truly, truly empowering women in these events. And it's just so refreshing that it's not about, you know, I'm the CEO here, I'm the CFO, or I'm the CIO of this company, look at me. It really, truly is, how do we empower each other? How do I, as a CEO or a member of a board, help you get on the board? And that was one of the big things that really made me so just passionate about even talking to younger women and younger men, is that, you know, how do we get more of these women in those seats in boardrooms, right? Because the average, gosh, I mean, you might have 10 boardrooms full of executive people, but you might have 3 to 4 women and everybody else is a man. And I'm not saying that, you know, men don't deserve to be there. I'm just saying I know for a fact that women deserve to be there. And how do we kick down that door? Right. And these women really kind of give you that guidance on how to kick down that door. And I thought, how wonderful is that? How wonderful would it have been if I had heard this in my 20s?
What did you talk about in your talk?
Well, in my talk, I talked about delegation. It is an Achilles heel, an ongoing Achilles heel for me, especially, you know, owning my own company. My business partner and I, we both kind of have our sandbox. He does sales. I do everything else, operations. And it's hard when you're in operations to let go of every department, knowing, you know, it can actually be detrimental if somebody's not doing their job. It can cost you a lot of money. Even something small to even something big as violating a regulation unknowingly, you know, there's a system that didn't get updated and now you're out of compliance and it can cost you money. So it's really hard to just keep your hands everywhere. But at some point, you have to empower your people. If you don't empower them, you're not delegating effectively. And that's what I found, is I just needed to learn really how to dial in the delegation.
So advice to your former self would be?
Delegate.
And I said it in my other video, is delegate better. Delegate until it becomes second skin. I mean, you really have to just trust the people that you put in place. And I know that's tough.
It's tough as a business owner because you want to delegate. You want to think the best of people. And sometimes you delegate and people fail, and right, then you pay for it big time.
Exactly. We've all been there.
And it's hard to let go of being a type A control freak.
Oh, and that, I definitely talked about that in my video. I joked about even being a control freak, telling my husband how he wasn't loading the dishwasher properly, you know. So, yes, of course, we're all, you know, A-type control freak women. But that's what makes us successful, is that we can manage to have our hands in different areas. But like you said, you know, when you lose money, it's hard to lose that control, want to lose that control again. So for me, it was just, okay, there's got to be a cost of doing business, and that had to be part of it. And I had to be okay with that. And then I had to learn, how do I not let that happen again in every department? I know it's going to change and it's different based on their roles, but I had to learn to really delegate the authority for them to make the decision without coming to me. Mm-hmm. And then once I did that, I really found that I created leaders, not just people who did the work for me. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think it's difficult, though, as a business owner, because sometimes then people go a little rogue and start making decisions that maybe you wouldn't have made, or like it's hard to rein that in. So
it's an ongoing. It's definitely an ongoing. And I also joked about, you know, act like you're going on vacation, because you don't delegate any better than when you're about to go on vacation, right? You want to leave. You're just thinking about that plane ride. You're thinking about the beach, relaxing. But, you know, you get so much done because you delegate right away. Yeah. But then when you come back, you immediately start back and checking in. Okay, what did you do? Yeah. Well, you know, that we all do that. Where do I leave off? What do I have to do? Where do I pick up? So doing that, I thought, well, you know what? Why do I wait till I'm on vacation to do that? So have your powwow meetings, you know, every month and say, okay, where did we leave off last month? We were, you know, I delegated this, or you had the authority to do that. What decisions did you make? Did you have any issues, questions? You know, so just touching base more often, going to lunch and doing, you don't have to sit in a boardroom because then nobody has time for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such good advice. A lot of injectors listen to me and follow me. So I think, like, as we are all running small businesses, it really is important to clone yourself by getting employees that are, you know, capable, that you can delegate with, right, that you trust them, they can turn over your entire practice to, and like go on vacation, because you got to take vacation.
And that you know in any situation maybe gone bad, that they can also rise to the occasion, and that you're not flying home from, you know, your wonderful vacation out in Tahiti or whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. Any other advice for small business owners, you being, of course, yourself a business owner? What have you found to be like a struggle?
You know, finding the areas of where you want to invest, reinvest, I should say, in your business. You and I talked about this a little briefly about a couple weeks ago about reinvesting in your own business. And it's very important. I find that, you know, you do an amazing job at branding. You do an amazing job at, you know, posting. And I love watching your videos. I love listening to your podcast. Yeah. I'm so honored, obviously, to be here with you on it. But, I love listening to it. And I just find that that's a great tool, is to reinvest in yourself. And we get so busy that we don't really think about what do I need to do to reinvest in myself? You made your initial investment, you opened up your business, and now you're just rocking and rolling, right? But you had made a good point. What empowers you? Reinvesting in yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. I think all of us need a life coach, a business coach, like no matter where you are in your career. Like, I have people I respect that I turn to when I need motivation or I need direction. And like, you need someone to guide you and help you cultivate what you're doing with your life and
absolutely
take inventory once in a while.
Yeah. And then sometimes, you know, it'll be maybe the smallest thing that they say, that the light bulb in your head, and you're like, wow, you know what? That really reminds me of what I need to do now, you know, or puts you on a path. So absolutely, surrounding yourself with amazing women and men, you know, just in general, with people, is always key. People who have like minds is very important, because you can relate, and it's a sense of, you know, camaraderie and a sense of community. And that's always important.
Mm-hmm. If you could change anything about how you began in finance, what would you do differently?
Wow, that is a fully loaded question. What I would do differently, I was in management quite young, at a quite very, very young age. I worked for a firm that it was top three firm nationwide. And by the time I was 25, I was their senior vice president for one of their divisions. Mm-hmm. And definitely, I think what I would do is I would worry a little less about what the people around me thought, mm-hmm. what kind of boss they thought that I was, mm-hmm. because I was young and they were all older.
Yeah.
So I would initially say is just find what's working for you. Obviously, you need to know and care. You can't just be oblivious to if you're, yeah. you know, have a certain personality, like, you can't just tell everybody what to do and not expect the feedback. So I think definitely it would be just bring on more suggestions, listen to them, but actually implement what they say, because it's very valuable.
I think that's true. As a woman in business, one of the big hurdles is to be able to talk like a man and to be able yes. to give direction. And I mean, these are just stereotypical statements, of course.
But
like,
very true. You're not wrong at all.
It's difficult because you have to approach your employees as a friend. You have to talk to your women employees like a girlfriend, and you don't want to be regarded as a bitch. But on the other hand, you have to be a bitch occasionally,
exactly.
and not necessarily just being a bitch, but just being in charge and making
right.
these decisions that can be painful or not comfortable for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm sure I've been called that a few times in my life, especially because there are times there, you know, it's necessary. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't think of it as being a bitch. Honestly, I think of it as being, you know, assertive.
Yeah.
I know there's a fine line between aggressive and assertive, but being assertive, there is nothing wrong with that.
But there's this societal like idea that when you talk to people directly and you're a woman, you're being a little too aggressive and you're not, sugarcoating the way you
yes.
say, do you mind helping me to do this, when you really just need to be able to say, I need you to do this.
Right, right.
But then you come across as a little rough on the edges.
Right.
And that's okay sometimes. You know, when you're running a business, it's your business to run your business. It's not my business to be everybody's girlfriend, right? And you know, I think if you take your employees, do like a lunch off site where you talk about ideas, I think that whole wall starts to come down between your employees and you as well.
Mm-hmm. It's important to see your employees as an individual, as well as to recognize their strengths
and their weaknesses.
Because
we all have them, you know.
That's true.
We all have them,
and learn acceptance for their weaknesses and learn how to build them up with their strengths.
Yeah.
And don't push them on something that clearly, you know, it is their weakness. Part of when I was talking about delegation in the other event, one of my right-hand women said, oh my God, there's no way I could do that. You can give me anything, but don't make me speak in public. And I laughed. I said, well, that's one of your weaknesses, right? That was why I chose one of that talking point, because I thought she is so great at what she does, but public speaking is not her thing. And she will freeze, and it's like she doesn't know a single thing, you know, when she's on camera or on a microphone or in a room full of people. But, and I always tell her, I said, you know, the worst thing I can do is throw you in a room full of people to go talk. If she's amongst her peers or her employees, it's not a problem. But if it's going to be in an audience, there's no way. So, and I know that about her. So I will go up, I'll do the talking. I'm Chatty Cathy anyway, so I have no problem with it. So I'll do it. She loves to do the research. She loves to feed me the information, say go. So that's kind of our partnership is I'll be the mouth. She could be the beauty and the brawn, you know, behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Any special tips in terms of being direct and assertive without, like, you know, going over the top?
Yeah. For me, I've learned, for one, eye contact, right? Is don't just disregard them by not looking at them and telling them what to do, because we all get busy and we do that. I know I've been guilty myself of doing that. But look them in the eye and say, listen, I'm not trying to push you into anything, but this is what I need you to do, right? Or I'm not trying to call you out. So I'm calling you in my office and we just need to chat. I really need this to be done this way. So that's important. Look them in the eye. Give them the respect that you would want somebody to give you. There's times, you know, that people are passionate about something and they really truly agree that that's how it's going to be best, but it's your business or it's your position to say otherwise. So I absolutely would just say, you know, give them the gentle look first before going in.
Were there any instances going through your educational process, like in school, graduate school, where you had, you felt like it was a very male dominated situation and that she struggled to, like, you know, grow and come to the top of this industry?
Absolutely. The mortgage industry used to be very male dominated, very much male dominated. And I was very fortunate in the company that I worked for that some of these strong women started, you know, opening doors. And so by the time I was 25, I was able to join them in that room. And it was very empowering, but absolutely. I went through my share of, well, if you didn't play golf, you weren't part of the decision-making, right?
That's rough.
It really is. Cause I feel like you would feel awkward even going on the golf course. If you wanted to elbow your way into that, you'd still feel like a third wheel.
Cause that's a tight crew right there. Just, you know, not being part of their little, you know, golfers crew. And then, you know, even just simple things, you know, a lot of the time men were like, well, she's young, she's, you know, you could say a lot of women are beautiful women. And if they dress, maybe their dress is a little shorter than somebody else's. They didn't dress like maybe our, you know, our mother's era where you went to an office with pants or down, you know, below your knees. You know, yes, I wore shorter skirts, but, you know, I didn't let men talk to me in a way that was like, hey, honey. It's like, no, I'm not honey. I'm Erica. Yeah. And I never, you know, and a lot of women ask me, but what did you do to, like, because men are men. Yeah, men are men. And, you know, now with the Me Too movement, things have changed vastly. But during that time, when I was growing up in my career, I would just literally ignore it, mm-hmm. just absolutely ignore it. And I think kind of giving them that more of an aggressive stare of not going to happen, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we all go through that fair share for sure.
Yeah, I hope it changes going forwards. I think men will be much more sensitive or being trained and educated yes. by yes. society and school and universities, et cetera.
Yeah.
And HR departments everywhere, but I'm me too. And surgery, definitely very male dominated, very, very male dominated.
How are you able to break that? Because that's, I can't think of a more male dominated.
You can't break it. You honestly, literally can't break it until there are more women who sit at the top being chairwomen and board of directors and, like, you know, chair of surgery departments, which is starting to happen. But in surgery, like, less than 5% of surgeons are women. And, you know, I just think that I learned a lot from men, and I respect and honor all of my future for all of my former teachers, mm-hmm. but it also hardens you a little bit.
Sure.
You have to learn to survive. You have to harden your shell. Yeah. It made me tough. It made me a great surgeon. It made me, you know, laugh things off and be able to joke with the boys. Exactly. You have to learn how to do that. And you just develop a thicker skin.
Yeah.
But you know who you are. You have to learn who you are and what your boundaries are.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better. Your boundaries, for sure. Now, I did see recently, you know, on Instagram and different, you know, avenues of social media, that there's a lot of backlash for women who are in the medical field like yourself who post very sexy pictures.
I saw that. Yes, there was a whole thing where two crazy vascular surgeons wrote an article, a medical article published in a journal of vascular surgery where they assessed Facebook posts of women surgeon, women doctors, not just surgeons, but women physicians, and they assessed how often women were showing themselves wearing a bathing suit, right, holding an alcoholic beverage, or in a party situation in a revealing outfit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with such a double standard, like they evaluated residents and training programs, but they didn't look at all the men the same way. Like they didn't post, they didn't count the pictures of guys wearing bathing suit trunks holding right. beers. They just counted women in bikinis holding cocktails as inappropriate and revealing, and you know they cited this whole article. It was a huge flare up from all the women and all the medical specialties everywhere. We all posted all of our pictures wearing bikinis.
Yes, I did see a lot of that. I couldn't have been more proud.
I know, it was just such a double standard. Absolutely. And such an unnecessary thing to feel that a woman can't wear a bathing suit and be a boss girl in the operating room, or you know, in the medical office space in general.
Right. Imagine having beauty and brains. I don't think that they can compete with that.
No. And imagine all the pictures of guy orthopedic surgeons and whatnots wearing their, wearing their swimming trunks holding beers, and that's appropriate. Right. But a woman can't hold a margarita with a bathing suit top.
Yeah. You can't be beautiful and intelligent. No.
Yeah. So there's always this double standard. So I don't think society is going to change to never have it. And even if it's camouflaged very well, it's going to still be there in the boardroom, in the operating room. Absolutely. With us. And so, you know, women have to stick together. Absolutely. One thing I love about what you said was how women were empowering other women. So as more women reach positions of power, like this year, I'm finally chairwoman of my department at Huntington. Yeah, it's been like 17 years to get there, but damn it, I did. But now that I am in that position, I'm taking it upon myself to get more other women introduced and bring them in and chat them up, like the new women just graduating residency, like call them up and have lunch and say, hey, this is how this hospital works, and let me give you a few pointers, and call me anytime, and here's my number. Like, it just takes that little extension of yourself to make the world better for those people starting out, younger people.
Well, I have to say that, I mean, that is admirable, because that's exactly what they need. I mean, there's no way we're going to kick down the doors alone, right? We can't be alone at the top either. Yeah. Otherwise, it gets lonely at the top. We want to empower the people to take over for us. I, you know, like you own your own practice. You really want to always have somebody that you can rely on. Well, you can't rely on someone if you're not empowering them. So empowering the youth to come up behind you, you know, women especially, you know, to be in that boardroom as an average person, not just, okay, there's four women in a room of 20 men, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's super important to just empower them. And I think it's great and admirable that you're doing that, because I can tell you, I can almost speak for them saying, wow, you know, had you had that opportunity, can you imagine where you would be even more today? You probably could have been there 10 years earlier, hopefully.
Definitely. And I've been in the opposite situation too, where women in power have sort of felt threatened and batted people down. And like, you have to come from a place of feeling like community over competition. You really have to not feel threatened in your own. You have to be very secure with yourself. But that just opens so many more opportunities for everybody.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yes. And you are absolutely right. I experienced my fair share of that, being a young woman in the position that I was in. A lot of the ladies were a lot older than me. I mean, I hate to say a lot, but they were. And so no, they didn't take kindly to somebody who was younger and new and just thought, who's this young gal? Yeah. Why is she here? You know? Yeah. So unfortunately I experienced that myself, but again, like you talked about, you got to have thick skin. You just can't be offended by everything these days, right? Everybody's offended these days by every little thing. I don't get offended. I either make a decision about it and move on, or do something about it.
Mm-hmm. It's very true. Being on Instagram every day, you learn that quickly. Like, yeah, you're going to have your haters. Yes. And that's just the way it is. And you just have to be yourself and put good content out there and put good vibes into the universe.
Exactly.
Well, it's been so fun chatting with you. I hope it was inspirational for all my business boss ladies out there running practices and learning how to invest, whether you're 20, 30, or 50, or 90. You have to take care of yourself. You have to put aside some little bit of nest egg to spoil yourself, indulge in things, do the self-care, right?
Yes, yeah. And add to it. Your savings account should be part of your self-care.
Yes, and women out there, you need to have your own independent bank account. Yes. Not everything should be community property.
It doesn't have to be. You can have community property, and then you should also be able to take care of yourself.
You need to have your secret cookie jar money, and you need to have your hidden bank account. You can tell them you have your personal account, but it's your personal asset that's yours from before weddings, marriage, boyfriends, everything, and always have that because you just never know how life goes. And I am going to stay married forever, but I told my husband, like, have my own personal account. Yes.
And it, you know, and a true partner will encourage you to do that.
Yeah, there shouldn't be any problem with that. And you have to protect yourself always. So I just encourage women who are concerned or want to learn more about business mortgage banking to look up Erica. She's amazing. So Erica, where can people find you on your various handles?
Well, you can find us at hightechlending.com. And then from there, you can reach us at any point in any of our offices. We have offices throughout the U.S. And that's kind of the easiest way.
Well, you've been such a pleasure to chat with.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Congratulations to you again. My goodness, what an amazing accomplishment.
Thank you. I hope you guys learned a lot from this podcast. It's not always about beauty. It's also about taking care of yourself, which is more than just on the outside. It's more than just health. You also have to have wealth and sustainability because you got to take care of yourself for the long haul, ladies. So let's start investing, growing, and don't forget to delegate. Yeah. That's going to be my homework. That's it for now, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to find me on my Instagram doing amazing things with people's faces. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. And our website is the same, www.beautybydrk.com. Maybe we'll have Erica write a little blog post about the top tips that people can do for early investing and just protecting your assets.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.
Bye.
Bye.